Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots Monday Morning, where we react to the Sunday morning news shows that we watch so that you don't have to. I'm Katie Halper.
And I'm Aaron Mattei. Good Monday morning, everybody. Thanks for being here with us. Our website, which you can see in the bottom of your screen, is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there to support our show. Get bonus content, including the extended interview with last week's guest, George Galloway.
Which is great.
That was a great one.
Yeah. And good weekend, Aaron.
Good weekend. I'm nice. In D.C. right now to last night, Max Blumenthal, former guest of Useful Idiots. He was honored with the Pierre Spray Award for Journalism, along with Gareth Porter and Dave DeCamp of Anti-War News, and celebrating that. And now it's another week of continued live genocide.
Right.
That's what we wake up to every single day.
It kind of looks like you have wings.
Well, you know, this chair has actually featured – this chair has made an appearance in a previous episode of Useful Idiots. I don't know if you remember this, but I've stayed at the same place before, and it's the same kind of chair.
Oh, wow.
And it's like I'm sitting in like a throne or a space –
Right, deck, a little Star Trek vibe to it. Yeah, I like it. It gives you a lot of gravitas.
Yeah, I'm not a big Trekkie, so I can't really enjoy the moment as much as maybe a
Trekkie. Yeah. Brianna Joy Gray would be really excited if she were there. Yeah, big Trekkie, yeah. A lot of lefties are Trekkies, by the way.
How was your comedy event on Friday night, your fundraiser?
It was good, yeah. Sorry, I think maybe the Zoom didn't work. The Zoom link didn't work, but they're going to be sending it out. But yeah, it was a good time, and people were very, very funny. I mean, I'm not assessing myself. Other people were funny. I don't know because I don't watch myself. Hopefully, I was funny. But
so humble.
I can guarantee that others were funny. Yeah.
I'm sure you killed it as always.
Thank you.
All right. Well, speaking of killing it, how about our Sunday morning news shows?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a week! Well. Let's get to it with our weekly recap from Meet the Press.
Sunday morning. Good Sunday morning. The general election race for the White House has officially started this week. And on Saturday, President Biden and former President Trump faced off in battleground Georgia, a state Mr. Biden won in 2020 by fewer than 12,000 votes. Mr. Biden wasted no time taking aim at the former president, including for hosting Hungarian autocrat Viktor Orban at his Mar-a-Lago club on Friday.
Here's a guy who's kicking off his general election campaign on the road up with Marjorie Taylor Greene. It can tell you a lot about a person who he keeps company with. And yesterday he was hosting at his club, Viktor Orban.
Ooh, that's a real winning talking point with the electorate. Oh my God. Just mention Orban, and the swing states are going to go right for Biden.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The Rust Belt.
Oh yeah. Huge issue. Yeah. You know, they hate Orban because he's not obedient. They don't really care about his autocratic tendencies.
Yeah.
But you know, he did not want to get into the whole Ukraine proxy war thing. He's held it up a little bit. Recently, Biden met with that like far right leader of Italy who, when she won, everybody was freaking out like this is fascism.
Right.
But then she got a fash pass. She got a fash pass.
That's good.
Because she came on board with the Ukraine proxy war. And all of a sudden, all the fash talk was put to bed.
Yeah. And also, he didn't just hang out with her. He kissed the top of her head.
Of course. So, I didn't know that. Of course.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it's if he wants to look, I think Orban is terrible. And he shouldn't get a fash pass. But as you put it, I like that term. But Giorgia Meloni shouldn't get a fash pass either. And if Biden is so concerned with hosting etiquette, you know, a bunch of his top officials did recently host Benny Gantz, who ran a campaign ad bragging that under his IDF leadership, quote, parts of Gaza were sent back to the Stone Age.
So Benny gets a fash pass. That Italian leader, she gets a fash pass, but not Orban.
Meloni, yeah.
Not Orban.
Exactly.
Who says he doesn't think democracy works?
Don't think.
When he says he wants to be a dictator, I believe him.
And new this morning, NBC News is first to report that Biden's reelection effort brought in $10 million in the 24 hours following his State of the Union address, a record haul for his campaign.
And all of it came from Chaim Saban, the pro-Israel billionaire. I'm kidding, but you know. $10 million. That's a big haul. Okay.
It is, yeah.
The maybe, country's fired up for Biden.
Maybe he got some extra. I wonder if Adam Schiff had any extra campaign funds that he threw his way, given how much money he spent on his own campaign and on, you know, elevating his Republican opponent, helping him get to number two in that primary.
Schiff to Schiff. We're going to hear from him shortly.
Yeah.
Biden team is leaning into its early cash edge against former President Trump, launching a new ad that takes on the issue of his age directly while contrasting his record with Mr. Trump's.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people. And that's what I'm doing.
The ad is the first in a $30 million blitz that will target key battleground states over the next 6 weeks. Biden's Georgia visit follows a stop in Pennsylvania on Friday. Next week, he'll barnstorm key states, including New Hampshire, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Vice President Harris was in Arizona and Nevada this weekend, and cabinet secretaries are hitting the road to sell President Biden's agenda as well. 60 miles away from President Biden's event in Atlanta, in Rome, Georgia, former President Trump painted a dark picture of America, calling the press criminals and mocking President Biden for having a stutter.
Two nights ago, we all heard Crooked Joe's angry, dark, hate-filled rant of a State of the Union address. Wasn't it? Didn't it bring us together? Remember, he said, I'm going to bring the country to together. I'm going to bring it together. Everything Joe Biden touches turns everything.
I mean, that's true, I think, actually, if you, especially if you look at his foreign policy. But the problem is, can Donald Trump say anything differently about himself?
Right.
You know, trying to think of his accomplishments when he was in office. What was it? His main accomplishment was passing a tax cut for the ultra wealthy.
Okay. Yeah.
Like one thing he got done. Everything else was just madness. I mean, I can't believe these are our choices once again.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so awful. Yeah. God, Donald Trump. He really is like a stand. I mean, not very funny, but he really works a crowd like as if he were a stand up.
And then everyone's got their own natural calling. You know, yeah. What would Trump be doing in life if he wasn't corrupted by his elite background and his narcissism and then his political ambitions? You know, maybe he'd be a stand-up.
Right.
You know, he'd be freed of that and maybe he'd be happier.
Well, like it's Zelensky, you know, there's that track. There's that sinus track between comedy and politics we see with Zelensky.
Zelensky was definitely a talented actor, and the world would have been better off if he had stayed doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. That show he was in was pretty funny.
Yep. People liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to one of former President Trump's staunchest allies, Senator Lindsey Graham. He's out there making the case that Joe Biden is not somehow the guy called Genocide Joe is not supportive enough of the genocidal state of Israel.
One other thing is, I was surprised before we do that. I was surprised, I forgot to mention this, that Joe didn't make fun of Trump's age. I mean, Trump isn't exactly a spring chicken, but I guess if you open that door, then you open the door to Trump swinging back and saying something like, well, I'm not that much younger than him, but he's a bumbling idiot. So anyway, food for thought.
You said it's your one-stop shop for Biden campaign tips.
Yeah.
We do it for free.
Workshopping it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Spitballing. Yeah. All right. Let's hear from friend of show, Lindsey Graham.
I want to get your response to how President Biden reacted to MSNBC's Jonathan Capehart about that hot mic moment where he was overheard saying he's going to have a come to Jesus moment with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Here's
anti-Semitic. It needed to be a come to Yahweh moment.
That's what he said.
He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world. It's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake.
Senator, do you agree that Prime Minister Netanyahu is hurting Israel by not doing more to address the humanitarian crisis?
No, I really don't. I'd like to help the humanitarian crisis, but When the President of the United States talks about Bibi and not Hamas, we're missing the boat here. When you talk about red lines against Israel, we should be talking about red lines against Iran. Israel's not killing American soldiers. Iran is through their proxies. So I would urge President Biden to hold the great Satan Iran accountable for killing soldiers in Jordan and attacking shipping. So, yeah, I think he's got it backwards. We should be all in and helping Israel. We should try.
This is the standard thing where basically anything that any ally of Iran does is Iran's fault. So he's blaming Iran for the attacks by Ansar Allah, right, the Houthis on the ships, which are done to protest the genocide in Gaza. And he's saying that, you know, militias in Syria, which are killing U.S. troops, that's all the fault of Iran, even if Iran has no role in those operations. It's just allies with the groups doing it. And, of course, it's never the fault of the U.S. for having those troops there to begin with to get shot at and killed and attacked with drones, and also backing unconditionally a genocide, which, contrary to Lindsey Graham's suggestion, Joe Biden is 100% behind.
Yeah, I do like the idea that Iran was behind it, even though they didn't know what was happening.
And then he says, like, yeah, I'd like to. And then, of course, the whole debate is of, like, is Joe Biden being unfair to Netanyahu? Right. Is it there's some kind of difference between them? They're complicit. They're equally complicit in the blockade of Gaza. Joe Biden just underscored that when he announced this fake stunt to build a pier off the coast of Gaza rather than force Israel, which he could do, to stop blocking aid.
Right.
There's thousands of trucks lined up at the border with Gaza in multiple areas, which Israel is just not letting through.
Yeah, the difference is that Biden pretends to be critical somewhat of Netanyahu.
Exactly. Exactly. And Lindsey Graham wants to stop pretending.
Yeah, exactly. And Aaron, you wrote about the fake news of that floating port.
I did at my Substack. And yeah, it's just, you know, Biden administration officials even admit that the pier is basically a scam. It was in the Washington Post where some people in the White House said, yeah, we know that unless the land crossings open up, we don't know how we're going to prevent famine. That was basically the admission. So they know that unless the land crossings are open, there will be a famine, but they won't do anything to stop the famine. Instead, what they're doing is pretending to get food in via this pier, which will take weeks to complete. He's like, you can't just put up a pier in a day. It's going to take at least, I don't know, 4 weeks, probably longer, I think. And then by that point, how many people will have died? And then, of course, how much aid can you even get in from that pier compared to trucks which are loaded up at the border? So it's just it's a complete scam. And by the way, I've already, you know, I have a friend in northern Gaza who told me that people are fighting over the meager amounts of aid that are being dropped. He's worried that it's going to lead to people being killed. And, of course, there have been people killed in an airdrop when a parachute failed to open. So literally, the aid that Biden is dropping on Gaza by air as a stunt to avoid giving them actual aid by land is killing people.
Right. Absolutely awful. These stunts.
Try to help the humanitarian crisis, but don't say or do anything that would empower our enemy.
And President Biden does spend plenty of time talking about Hamas. The issue here is there not more that Israel can do to help the humanitarian crisis open up a crossing for their own port in the area?
Stay tuned in that area. I think Israel will be coming up with some sea corridor relief ideas. But the lie that struck me the most in the
That means a stunt, another stunt.
Right, another stunt, yeah.
Stay tuned for another stunt. They've been talking ever since the start, there's been this talking point from like Samantha Power, Blinken, we're going to surge aid into Gaza. It's like, it's always happening. It's coming. Trust us, guys, trust us.
Right.
And now we're 5 months in, and of course, it's being blocked. Everything is a performance to whitewash the fact that they're deliberately starving the people of Gaza.
Yeah, you know, they were left out of the, they should have been nominated for an Oscar. I don't know if you guys watched last night. I knew you obviously didn't, Aaron, because you were celebrating Max. And even if you hadn't been, you wouldn't have been watching, as we've gone over in our one woman show performances of me talking about the Oscars. Mm-hmm. But this is award winning, not just acting and performance, but stunt work.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
I did hear that the team behind Zone of Interest, which you really liked, Katie, mentioned the occupation of Gaza in their speech.
And they got totally taken out of context because they said, we refute our Jewishness being used and the Holocaust being hijacked. Mm-hmm. We refute our Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked. for this occupation, for this genocide. I'm paraphrasing, but the part that I'm quoting directly is we refute our Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked. And of course, people were like, they said we refute our Jewishness. It was such a dishonest, absolutely disgusting. And, you know, Batya, of course, tweeted that and was like, imagine the moral rot in refuting your Jewishness. And I'm like, no, they didn't refute their Jewishness. They refuted the hijacking of their Jewishness to justify the genocide, which is exactly what you're doing in this tweet, Batya. So thanks for showing instead of telling.
State of the Union, he told Hamas, if you release the hostages, the war will be over. I literally about fell out of my seat. Is the president saying that if the hostages are released by Hamas, they can stay in power? That ends the conflict? I want to be very clear about this. President Trump believes it's non-negotiable when it comes to Hamas. They have to be destroyed militarily. They can't be in charge. So I'm challenging the Biden administration today to clear this up. You cannot allow Hamas to stay in power. You can't allow them to have six brigades to do October 7th again. So the hostage issue is important, but we have to have a non-negotiable policy when it comes to destroying the military capability of Hamas.
And President Biden said that he does stand firmly behind that objective.
Well, he shouldn't have said the war is over if you release the hostages. Right. It will not be over.
And that hostage negotiation, that potential temporary ceasefire, those talks have currently stalled.
Yeah.
Again, this is disincentivizing releasing hostages.
Yeah, so Lindsey Graham is saying basically he doesn't want the hostages released because Hamas's condition is a permanent end to the war. That's their condition. So Lindsey Graham is basically saying, no, that's not going to happen.
And they've been clear on this from the beginning. I mean, when I say they, everyone from Biden to Netanyahu, they have no real interest in prioritizing the release of the hostages, because if they did, they'd be negotiating and not bombing and killing their own by bombing them, by shooting three of them, and by releasing gas into a tunnel that a soldier who was a hostage, his mother alleges, killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys have covered that at the Gray Zone.
Yeah, yeah. And why are they so on board with this idea of destroying Hamas so it can never govern again? It's because it's not because of the atrocities that happened on October 7th, which did happen, although, as we've covered a lot, there was a lot of also atrocity propaganda claiming things that happened that just did not happen. And in fact, there's a new documentary out today by Al Jazeera goes through some of this. But it's because Hamas resisted. Hamas resisted a military occupation, and they achieved some success from the point of view of a military, a guerrilla operation. They killed Israeli soldiers. They took hostages. They defied the master. And when you're a hegemon, an occupier, you just cannot tolerate that. And that's why they've gone crazy in basically taking out their frustration on their humiliation at being defied by the colonized on the people of Gaza. They want to just leave Gaza uninhabitable to punish everybody for the actions of Hamas, which dared to resist the occupier.
Right.
When you're Lindsey Graham or you're Benjamin Netanyahu or Joe Biden, you can't tolerate the idea of people resisting you. You just can't.
Yeah, you can't tolerate it. Yeah. By the way, we're at 549 likes. We got about 1865 watching. Let's get that up, guys. Let's get that up to right now in real time. Let's get that up to 600. We shouldn't have to be telling you this, but apparently we do. All right. We have so much important news that I'm going to be a mensch about it and not hold you hostage.
We're not going to hold them hostage?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of hostages. Yeah.
Yeah.
But look at that. My kindness paid off. We're at 627. Keep up the likes, everyone. Oh my God. 694. Amazing. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Well, let's turn from Lindsey Graham to Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, you face me.
Who is, to his credit, opposes funding for Israel. He's the only Democrat or the only person in the Democratic caucus willing to do that, I believe. So, but so he's out front, really, when it comes to challenging Biden. But still, he can't fully get around the idea of calling for a permanent ceasefire because he also agrees with his goal of destroying Hamas. But anyway, here he is talking to Face the Nation about what he thinks President Biden should do.
Said Israel's You've said Israel's in violation of the Foreign Assistance Act, as have a handful of other Democratic senators. They may also be in violation of the Leahy Act. The president himself has the national security.
And by the way, that's when you support governments that are committing human rights crimes, which obviously they are in violation of that act. Named after Bernie's former co-senator, who is now retired, Patrick Leahy.
Powers to suspend. Do you really think, though, in a presidential election year, that the president of the United States would halt or pause or condition aid to one of the closest allies in the Middle East?
Well, I think it is the right thing to do. You can't beg Netanyahu. You got to tell him if you want any money, you got to change your policy. Allow the trucks to come in to feed the children. And by the way, in terms of politics, which is secondary to my mind in this issue, the truth is, whether you're a conservative Republican or a progressive, you do not want to see children in Palestine starve to death. So I think it's good politics, and it's the moral and right thing to do.
Okay, Bernie. Well, you know, it took him a while, but it's better than pretty much everybody else in Congress. But he still endorses the idea, though, of destroying Hamas.
Right.
And when you do that, you're basically going to guarantee that this will go on in perpetuity, because Israel just, you know, the goal of destroying Hamas is, first of all, it doesn't address the root problem, which is the occupation, which he still doesn't really talk about very much. And he makes this about Hamas rather than about the occupation, which I think is very short-sighted.
It reminds me of the war on terror, right? It's this amorphous goal, which also lets you do anything in the name of it without it. And it's also impossible to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we got more Bernie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what impact this is going to have on his endorsement.
On the politics of this, more than 100,000 voters in Michigan went uncommitted to protest Mr. Biden's policy. In the state of Minnesota, in the recent primary there, you saw a similar boycott. Almost 20% went uncommitted. Given your moral objections, your personal issues here, can you, in good conscience, ask your supporters to vote for Mr. Biden?
Well, look, the contrast that I think President Biden made it very clear in the State of the Union address, if you believe that climate change is real, you got to vote for President Biden. If you believe that women have a right to control their own bodies, you got to vote for President Biden. If you think that a time of massive income and wealth inequality, you don't give trillions of dollars in tax breaks to the 1%, you've got to vote for Biden. If you want to lower the cost of prescription drugs, you got to vote for Biden. If you believe in democracy and involving people in the process rather than keeping people from voting, you have to vote for Biden.
So you're saying progressives need to put this aside?
I am saying we've got to come, not put it aside. The fight continues to change Biden's policy in Gaza, but the contrast between Biden and Trump is day and night. The election of Trump would be a disaster for this country and, in my view, the world. We've got to come together, reelect Biden, but at the same time, we have to demand that we have a progressive agenda where we have an economy that works for all, not just the few.
So you're standing by your endorsement of Mr. Biden's election despite the current policy?
No, I am not supporting Mr. Trump. No,
Mr. Biden.
The election of Trump would be...
He's answering that by saying he's not supporting Trump.
Well, he just, you know, in the previous clip, he was making the case that you have to leverage military aid to Israel to get it to change its behavior. So why can't he apply that to his own political course of action, which is now, you know, whether or not to endorse Biden? Why not say, I'll endorse Biden if he stops the war? He's taking away his own leverage. That would be the critique there.
Right.
I mean, there
as everyone is so good at doing, who's already hitched their ride to Biden. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, for all my criticisms of Joe Biden, you can't deny that there are, of course, major areas, especially domestically, where the Democrats are better and they're less harmful to working people than Republicans. That's just true. But the question becomes, can you give someone a pass for genocide? And I mean, it's a personal choice. You know where we stand on this. Bernie feels differently. But even from the point of view of wanting to see Biden reelected, given that this is costing Biden political support, you know, his support of the genocide, why not use the leverage you have and the big platform you have if you're Bernie to actually condition your support for Biden, which he won't do, which then takes away his leverage and makes him easy to ignore. Because why should Biden care what he has to say
exactly.
if he's already ignored?
If he's already in the bag.
Yeah. And Democrats really, I think, are making a very strong case that they're better out of power than in power. Because, you know, let's say Trump was in office doing the same thing, which is a fair presumption. Would Democrats be so on board with this genocide as they have been like under Biden?
Right.
Some of them would be. But I think more people might be more appalled, especially because the Democratic voters would be even more against it because it'd be overseen by a Republican president in Trump.
Right. Although I got to say, this is a lot of people are who were lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
Have come out as saying that they either won't guarantee their vote or obviously or honestly just won't ever vote for Biden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, for some people, genocide is a red line.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Let's turn to Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia, also talking about this.
Let's talk about the war in the Middle East now. In his State of the Union address, President Biden announced that the U.S. is building a port to get more humanitarian aid into Gaza. It could take as long as 60 days. Doctors Without Borders called it, quote, a glaring distraction from the real problem, Israel's indiscriminate and disproportionate military campaign and punishing siege. Is sending more aid enough, Senator, when innocent civilians are being killed and are dying every day?
Listen, we have got to find our way quickly to the path that leads to peace. That's why the other night on the floor of the United States Senate, I pushed for a ceasefire. I know the president is working hard to get to a ceasefire. Mr. Netanyahu has got to recognize that we've already seen the deaths.
How is Biden working hard for a ceasefire when he's pledging unconditional support for Israel and just putting out these performative stunts to avoid putting any pressure on Israel, including this new pier and the airdrop? So what's he talking about? They call for a ceasefire, but then they give a huge pass to the person standing in the way of it, which is Biden. And Warnock, by the way, voted recently for that so-called foreign aid package, which includes $61 billion for the Ukraine proxy war and more than $14 billion for Israel. So how is he putting his call for a ceasefire into action beyond just saying it? When it comes to actual votes, he's still giving Israel all the military support that it wants to carry out this genocide.
Right.
You know, Bernie, to his credit, voted against it.
Yeah, I know. It's all this window dressing.
Yeah.
It's really pathetic.
So some 30,000 Palestinians, many of them innocent women, men, and children. You know, I think of...
You know, shout out to Warnock, though, for acknowledging men. Because a lot of the discourse around Palestine talks about innocent women and children. And that's, of course, true. And I understand that they're trying to argue that they're by being women and children, it's less likely that they're combatants. Mm-hmm. But there has been a lot of kind of default criminalization of being a man while Palestinian.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah. And of course, the percentage of civilians, it's incomprehensible. Lloyd Austin was recently asked, how many women and children has Israel killed? He said over 25,000. They later tried to correct it and say he thought the question was something else. But I don't know. The question was pretty clear. And he said over 25,000 women and children have been killed alone. You know, so the official toll right now is around 30,000. But of course, in real life, it's way higher. Like the official toll is sort of like it's a form of denial in itself because it's just it's way too low. It's way too low.
It is. And by the way, Pedro the Lion says, you must show them you are capable of not voting for them, Lawrence O'Donnell. That's something that Lawrence O'Donnell, who's of course an MSNBC host, but he used to work in the Senate. And he said that on video that politicians care not at all about what the left is saying because they don't think that they have anywhere to go.
Right. Okay, I think we can move on from this clip. Good for Senator Warnock for calling for a ceasefire, but what is he actually doing to see that happen? How is he pressuring Joe Biden? He's certainly not pressuring Joe Biden by saying that Biden's doing all he can for a ceasefire. Right.
He's providing him with an out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's such a lie. You hear it so many times. Biden wants to do, he can't do anything. This is all that he can do. His hands are tied. Netanyahu's going to do this no matter what, even though we know that from Israeli soldiers and officials, we know that they couldn't be doing this without American support.
There was the grossest line in the New York Times the other day where they said that Joe Biden, they said this, the U.S. finds itself on both sides of the war in a way, arming the Israelis while trying to care for those hurt as a result. Isn't that so sick?
Yeah. Yep.
Like, we're supporting a genocide, but we're also on the other side of it.
Right. Good business model. Good business model.
Yeah. We're bombing people while also handing out like random aid packages to some of the people being bombed.
Right.
And that means we're on both sides. It's just, it's so gross. It's so gross. That's basically the Democrats right now.
Right.
Pretending to care about Gazans while doing everything they can to exterminate them.
Giving them, like handing the gun to the shooter and then throwing some, gauze bandages at the victim of the shooting to try to help them.
Okay, let's turn to the co-chairs of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner, Marco Rubio. Mark and Marco, what a duo.
I know, Eminem.
What a neocon duo.
Yeah, bipartisan neocon duo.
Yes.
BND. Like the Michael Jackson. Jackson song. I want to love you. BND.
Yes. I'd love to see them cover that together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's hit it.
U.S. national security lens. How concerned are you about the rising risk to U.S. interests in the Middle East because of the close alliance with Israel's war in Gaza?
I think it's a mistake to view October 7th simply through the lens of the Palestinian-Israeli question. I think the reason why Hamas was armed, equipped, and felt the confidence is this broader narrative, this broader objective that Iran has to drive the U.S. out of the region. It is why they're conducting attacks in Iraq and Syria. They want a U.S. troop presence out of the region completely.
Should it stay? Do you believe that those 2,500 troops in the region should stay?
I do, and the reason why I believe that is because they are not only there on a counter-ISIS mission. Let's not forget that group is still existing and is still a threat. But because they sit, the reason why Iran wants us out of there is that we are stationed at key points that tie Damascus and Baghdad and all these supply routes that Iran wants to dominate. If we were gone, these proxy groups would now be at the border of Jordan, be able to threaten Jordan and ultimately threaten Israel as a result. But I am concerned. I mean, whether it's Hezbollah and up in the north of Israel, whether it's what's happening in Gaza, whether it's what's happening with Yemen, the risk of conflict is very real. It's a dangerous and tenuous situation. There's no doubt about it.
President Biden's review.
God, I mean, there's so many lies in that answer. So first of all, he says we shouldn't look at October 7th through the lens of Hamas and through the lens of Israel-Palestine.
Right.
So basically saying we shouldn't look at this as people resisting a multi-decade military occupation and siege, right? This is about Iran. This is about Iran somehow. It's all about Iran. And then he says that U.S. troops are in Syria to fight ISIS, which is false.
Totally false, yeah.
I've debunked this before. If you read the Pentagon's own reports on that mission in Syria, because they have to put out these quarterly reports on how the mission's going, basically you read them every time. They're like, yeah, we didn't do any fighting against ISIS. It's actually Syria and Russia and Iran that are fighting ISIS.
Exactly.
We're just chilling at our bases, playing cards. That's basically what it is. They're not fighting ISIS. And this is after, of course, John Kerry admitted when he was Secretary of State that the U.S. let ISIS spread in Syria because they wanted to use ISIS as a form of leverage against the Syrian government.
Right.
Assad. They thought, and Kerry literally said this, he explained it. He said that we thought that as ISIS was growing and threatening Damascus, we thought that would force Assad to negotiate. So basically, the U.S. helped ISIS spread to Syria after helping to create it by invading Iraq. And now they're in Syria claiming that they're there to fight it, even though they're not fighting it. What they're really doing is they're just in Syria stealing Syria's oil and wheat. Because, as a member of the Biden administration, Dana Struhl put it, that gives the U.S. leverage over Assad.
Right.
So it's all about
the exact opposite of what they're claiming with ISIS.
Yeah. Everything is leverage for regime change.
Right.
It's the exact opposite of what they're saying. And it endangers U.S. troops, as we saw recently when three people got killed at the Jordan-Syria border. And Marco Rubio then says that we should stay.
Yeah, I like that they're being honest about it being about ISIS. It's just the exact opposite. It's in the exact opposite way, yeah.
And then he says that, you know, Iran's allies in Syria, like the militias, that they might invade Israel and Jordan if we're not there, which is, I've never actually heard that one before.
He thinks outside the box.
So basically, Israel has been striking Syria for years now. Israel bombs Syria all the time. Syria can't retaliate because it's destroyed by the dirty war that we helped fund. And now we're punishing Syria even more by stealing its oil and wheat so that it's harder for people to survive. And he wants to argue that somehow if we weren't there occupying this region of Syria, they'd go into Jordan and Israel. It's just like, it's a complete lie. You know, meanwhile, we're actually there occupying their country illegally.
Right. I did as entertaining though, watching these guys talk about workshopping and spitballing.
Yeah. And the problem is there's so many lies in such a short amount of time that, like, even if the anchor wanted to correct, like, where would you start?
Right.
Because there's so many. You need, like, at least, like, a minute or two to just correct everything. Because everything he's saying is false.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear what Mark Warner has to say.
Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, says total victory is within reach, weeks away. You are not describing total victory within
reach. I have not.
You're saying the impact's
meeting
tiny.
Meeting with folks in Israel, in the military community, in the intelligence community, the idea that you're going to eliminate every Hamas fighter, I don't think is a realistic goal.
Mm-hmm. And you agree with that?
Well, I think that it is possible to achieve a situation in which Hamas does not have the capability to do what they did on October 7th. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean Hezbollah doesn't step in and take over now as a result. That doesn't mean that a new Hamas offshoot wouldn't be created. This is an ongoing challenge. And at the end, the head of this entire snake is the Iranian regime. They are the ones that provide the weaponry and the funds. There's no Hamas fighters starving to death. There's no Hamas leaders starving to death. They're all fed, they all have medical care, and they all have all the assistance they need to continue to do the things they do.
It all comes back to Iran. It's the head of the snake, in Rubio's words. So what does he want? He wants regime change in Iran, but like, what does he want to do about it? Should there be a war with Iran? I mean,
he can go over there.
Yeah. And again, why is he obsessed with Iran? Because Iran is a regional power and it's a deterrent to U.S.-Israeli hegemony. And when that's how you view the world, is yourself as like the mafia boss. You become obsessed with taking out anyone who stands in the way.
Right.
Who hurts your role. And that's Marco Rubio, basically.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to offend people, you know, Israel supporters who want to make this all. I mean, they like to link it to Iran, but I also think it almost makes it sound like he's almost trivializing the role of Hamas, because that's the only way that he can say that taking them out won't work. Like, he can't say that in any systemic way that critiques militarism or acknowledges that you don't get to the root of, you don't bomb terrorists out of existence. I mean, I'm not saying Hamas is terrorist, but that's what he thinks that they are, right? So he has to trace it back to Iran.
Exactly. All right. Well, we are going to see, though, we do have, of course, a democracy where we have competing parties who have all sorts of disagreements. And we're going to see one now. You have Senator Mark Warner, who wants the U.S. to funnel $61 billion into the proxy war in Ukraine. You have Senator Marco Rubio, who also wants to do that, but he also wants money to further militarize the border.
Yeah. And this is the degree of bipartisan disagreement that we have in Washington, D.C.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
Senator Rubio, you recently voted against the National Security Supplemental that would have sent $5 billion to the Indo-Pacific and to help Taiwan. Why do you think that money
can wait?
Well, I don't think it should wait. I just don't think it should be held hostage on the issue of whether or not we're going to deal with our border.
You are saying that the aid to Taiwan is being held hostage to the border, but you are saying the border needs to be handled first.
If we would have done a bill that would have voted for the money to Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific and money to Israel, I would have voted for that. But they want Ukraine in exchange for the border, and the same way they're holding Israel funding hostage. They won't do Israel funding without Ukraine. And I support helping Ukraine. But I believe that our national security begins in our own country, at our border, where today you have thousands of people a day walking into the country, many of whom we do not know who they are. That has to be a priority.
How do you get aid
to deal with Taiwan now?
Well, let's vote for it. Let's put up a bill that votes on Taiwan.
You're saying it has to be a standalone.
No, it doesn't have to be. I mean, if the president tonight at the State of the Union, I know we're taping this, and he announces that he's going to put back in place the policies that allowed us to detain single adults until the removal proceedings were done, I'll vote for that.
That requires a lot of funding. You know that.
It doesn't require a lot of funding. That's the existing law of the country.
Border security says it needs more funding, as does ICE.
Let's do the funding for that. But it starts with the executive order, which is what applies our laws.
I mean, it's such a weird debate. Like, some of us are sitting here like, hey, maybe we don't need to funnel another $61 billion into the proxy war in Ukraine, which is a disaster and is just sacrificing more Ukrainians and is, you know, Ukraine just keeps losing territory the more we funnel money into this war. And also, we also don't want to fund genocide. But those of us who think that aren't even represented, the only debate here is like, I want money for Ukraine right. and Israel, but I want money for the border to detain undocumented people and separate right. families.
Right.
So it's like a neocon cage match.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, I'm going to hold this part hostage.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you hold this part hostage.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like a standoff of hostage takers. Everybody has a bad policy that they want.
Right. You know?
So it's a fight over like which awful policy gets
exactly.
funded first. Or why can't we just fund it on its own? No, I want to fund it all together.
Right.
Very strange. Very, very strange.
That's our bipartisan landscape, everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a fan favorite coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Schiff, who, much to my chagrin, has just won the – or advanced in the Democratic primary in California for a Senate seat. He beat out Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. Barbara Lee was the only candidate in that race to call for a ceasefire in Gaza. Now Schiff is moving on, and he was on Meet the Press and asked about whether or not his support for a genocide could hurt him and Joe Biden, because at Adam Schiff's victory speech, it was an amazing sight. And I think we covered this last week on the show. It was interrupted. Yeah. They had to stop his victory speech because he was interrupted by people protesting for a ceasefire.
Right. Also, they're going to mention his opponent's critique of him. And as we pointed out on last week's episode, because California has a mixed primary, it's called the jungle primary. That means that the top two people who win go on for the general. It's not just Democrats against Democrats. It's Democrats and Republicans, whoever's in the primary. And so he spent tons of money boosting his Republican opponent because he knew he'd do better in a general against a Republican than he would in a general against a Democrat. So that's what she's going to refer to. Because again, his Republican opponent, he was running against three people in the primary, Barbara Lee, Katie Porter, and a Republican whose name I honestly can't remember, who was like a baseball team manager. And the baseball team manager didn't cut a single ad he didn't have to because Adam Schiff did it for him. And that's what he's going to be asked about.
Well, you do take me to my next question, which is that your victory speech was interrupted by pro-Palestinian protesters. Are you concerned that President Biden's full-throated support of Israel could overshadow some of these races, could cost seats up and down the ballot?
Look, I think President Biden is doing what he should do, and that is figure out what's the right answer, what's the right policy, how do we bring this conflict to an end? How do we make sure that a terrorist group like Hamas is no longer controlling Gaza? How do we get to a two-state solution? He's approaching it from what's the right thing to do, and then figuring out, okay, what are the political consequences and how do I deal with them instead?
So I guess the right thing to do then for Biden is to slaughter innocent people and block any effort to stop it, because he's vetoed multiple UN Security Council resolutions. He's bypassed Congress Congress is supposed to review military sales. He's bypassed Congress twice. And also, what he's also done, and this just came out last week in the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, what they've done is to avoid congressional notification, to avoid even telling Congress, hey, we're funneling all these weapons of death to Israel so they can kill people. They've broken up these weapon sales into small little pieces so that they fall under the number at which you're required to tell Congress. So it's like they've broken up. It's like you know, rather than like hand Israel a giant death cookie, they've broken it up into little crumbs, rolled it out. Therefore, they don't have to tell Congress that they're doing it. So that's what Joe Biden's been doing, trying to figure out how to arm this genocide. And Adam Schiff is saying that somehow we're supposed to believe that Joe Biden's up in the White House just trying to figure out what the best thing to do is. And, you know, he's stuck. The answer is elusive. He doesn't know. But in the meantime, let's just funnel weapons to Israel and block any efforts.
Right.
To stop. It's let's
err on the side of funding genocide when struggling. Yeah. Absolutely disgusting.
The other way around. And frankly, I think that's exactly what he should do. We're going to have to work hard to motivate and turn out young people in particular. I think he's got a phenomenal record to appeal to young people. No one's done more to reduce the burden of student debt than Joe Biden. No one has done more to attack climate change than Joe Biden. No one has done more to attack gun violence than Joe Biden. On a whole host of issues young people deeply care about, he's got an incredible record. But we can't take anything for granted. And I think the highest priority has to be in turning young people out to vote.
I wonder if Joe Biden's watching this and was like, that Schiff really speaks to young voters. Let's make him the voice of our Get Out the Vote youth campaign. Like Adam Schiff, the voice of young people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Look, yeah.
He just exudes.
Youthfulness. Yeah.
Yes.
In touchness.
Yes. Yeah. Adam Schiff is reportedly a vegan. And I've always said, I think it's the worst thing that ever happened to the vegan movement. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I think it's a disaster.
Yeah.
If I was Big Meat, I would feature Adam Schiff. I'd say, like, look, this is the guy. This guy's a vegan.
Right.
That's my tip for Big Meat, everybody.
Yeah, you just gave Promote Big Adam Meat Schiff. A huge leg up. Yeah.
In the same way that Adam Schiff promoted, like, his Republican opponent in the race.
Right.
If I was Big Meat, I would do that.
That's a good idea.
Undermine the vegans. Yeah.
Good thing you're not Big Meat.
I'm not Big Meat. No, I'm not.
Kristen, let me ask you about this development this weekend.
Look at his shifty face, by the way.
So officials are planning to provide briefings for Donald Trump if he officially advances November.
We don't need to go into this one. We're gonna go to the next clip of him shortly. But also, we also want to hear from another voice of the youth, which is Congressmember Hakeem Jeffries.
He is very cool. Remember, he delivered that an alphabetical order of. Remember, he had
God, that is one of the worst things ever.
Yeah.
Yes, he did the ABC. He did the alphabet.
Yeah.
And who was he was attacking? Like he was like promoting like the Democratic agenda.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really. I'm sure you suppressed that. On purpose. And I shouldn't have brought it up, honestly, without a trigger warning. Yeah. Yeah. He was reciting the Democrats' ABCs.
He'd have to update it now that, you know, G is for genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to make sure he updates that. Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear from this master of the word, spoken word master.
Moving to another issue that seems also stuck in Congress right now, aid to Ukraine. It runs out, ammunition does, in the month of April, according to the Ukrainian government. You want to get the $95 billion package, I know, from the Senate through the House. There's no date to do that. Speaker Johnson has not committed to do that. Do you need an alternative? And can you promise Joe Biden, who made this issue number one in the State of the Union, that you can deliver on it?
Of course, we don't need an alternative when you have a comprehensive bipartisan national security bill that has come over from the Senate, and all we need is an up or down vote in the House of Representatives, and everyone in Washington knows that it will secure at least 300 votes, if not more. So we can meet the needs of America's national security.
But there's no date to do that.
Our Democratic allies in Ukraine and Israel, humanitarian assistance to Palestinian civilians who are in harm's way, support.
I mean, let's just unpack some of that. So first of all, again, we're going to fund the death machine of Israel while also giving aid to Palestinians in harm's way.
Which it's is like, just, again, throwing them some band-aids.
Yeah.
It's for, just their, like, for getting bombed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just nonsensical. Like, and then he says also our Democratic allies in Israel and Ukraine. Like, let's look at that for a second. Like, Israel is presiding over the world's longest running military occupation. It rules over millions of Palestinians whose land it stole, who are denied basic rights, as we're seeing now in Gaza, where, you know, they're living in a death camp. They're being denied food. And of course, you know, in the West Bank, too, it's also really terrible, where they live under constant terror from the settlers and the military, all without any voting rights. How can you call that regime democratic? It's like it's the most anti-democratic regime in the world, actually. It rules over millions of people who not only can't vote, but are just actively denied their basic rights to live. And then he says Ukraine's democratic. Well, Ukraine's banned political parties. There's basically only one TV network, or there's a very, very few. Like, all the news is basically now state-run. They just, in Ukraine, a priest was just imprisoned for years because he called the Azov Battalion Nazis, which they are.
You mean he spoke the truth?
He spoke the truth, yeah.
Right.
So that's the state of our democratic allies in Israel and Ukraine. And it's just, you're allowed to say it as if it's like the sky is blue when it's just a complete lie.
Right. Really disgusting.
Our allies in the Indo-Pacific. That's a question for Mike Johnson. When he knows that the House has the votes to act on America's national security interests, the reason why it's not happening is because there's a pro-Putin faction in the Republican Party led by Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson who are blocking this legislation. And that's shameful.
Tucker Carlson is blocking this massive war funding bill. I didn't know that. That's really amazing. I mean, I think Tucker has an influence, but I don't think he has that much influence.
Right.
Actually has an influence. I mean, first of all, if you look at polls, some polls show a majority of Americans oppose more funding for the Ukraine proxy war. Certainly among Republicans, it's a majority. So is it possible that these Republican leaders are just listening to their base? And if not even their base, maybe they're looking at Joe Biden and he's running for reelection now. And for their own political interest, they're saying, hey, this is Biden's proxy war. We're not going to give him another lifeline to keep it going. We've already given him so much. It's his problem. You know, I think that's actually the calculation. But Hakeem Jeffries wants to pretend as if you oppose funneling more money into this proxy war, you're pro-Putin.
Yeah, and also maybe don't leave it to just like Tucker Carlson to be critical of a proxy war.
Well, that's the fault of the squad and Bernie Sanders and all the progressives who are totally on board with it. All right. Well, should we go back to favorite Adam Schiff?
Yeah, fan favorite Adam Schiff. And here's where he's asked about the role he played in elevating his Republican opponent.
Former opponent, Congresswoman Katie Porter, is now saying that the California Senate race was, quote, rigged. That's, of course, a term that Trump used to describe the 2020 election. Now, Porter says she was responding to, quote, an onslaught of billionaires spending millions against her. What do you make of her using the term rigged?
Well, first of all, Katie Porter ran a very tough campaign, as did Barbara Lee. They both called to extend very gracious congratulations this week. So I have nothing but respect for my colleagues. That term rigged, though, is a very loaded term in the era of Trump. It connotes fraud or ballot stuffing, false claims like those of Donald Trump. And I think what's remarkable is Democrats very quickly rallied to say, no, we don't use that language. The election was legitimate. And this is a sharp contrast to how the Republican Party treats allegations of rigged elections, which is they've gone along with them. Indeed, they're urging President Trump to pardon the January 6th insurrectionists if he ever got a chance. So a very different reaction among the parties to any kind of challenge to our democracy or suggestion that elections are illegitimate. But look, my opponents have been very gracious, and I have nothing but respect for them.
So, Congressman,
he's such a liar. He's basically trying to use, he's basically suggesting that Katie Porter is MAGA because she alleges rigging. And this is a danger that, I remember, like, Max Blumenthal pointed this out, your colleague at the Gray Zone. I know we keep talking about him today. We don't get any commission from his book sales or anything. But he mentioned how dangerous it was to present skepticism of election results as some kind of right-wing conspiracy theory when lots of Democrats and progressives were skeptical of Bush's victory.
Yep. Yeah. And of course, what did Adam Schiff do after Donald Trump won in 2016?
Right.
He basically helped frame him as a Russian agent and claimed that that election was stolen by Russia. He was at the forefront of that.
He's pretty MAGA himself then.
Yeah. He's Mr. MAGA by his own definition because he was like at the forefront of really one of the biggest scams, if not the biggest scams in U.S. political history, Russiagate. So that's how you challenge elections, according to Adam Schiff, is you frame your opponent as a Russian agent and claim that the Kremlin stole it from you.
absolutely disgusting.
Senator Schiff, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine, but you know, he's on the march. Okay, let's turn to this issue that's really growing now, where Congress, in a bipartisan fashion, is talking about banning TikTok because they can't handle the success of a social media platform that is not controlled by the U.S.
Yeah.
It's tied to China.
Right. They only want American companies to spy on you, exactly. Not Chinese. Yeah.
And we're going to hear the journalist Kara Swisher explain here what is behind this drive to ban TikTok, which I think she supports.
A podcast host, tech journalist Kara Swisher, author of a terrific new memoir, Burn Book, which is available now. Kara, welcome back to This Week. Thanks for joining us this morning. Try to break down this debate for everyone. What is the concern about China? What are the prospects that TikTok will actually be banned?
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to pass. I think there's bipartisan support for it. President Trump used to be for it until he was against it. Now, in fact, had an executive order around it. But I think a lot of people are worried about two things, surveillance and propaganda. And right now the focus is mostly on propaganda, especially, for example, around the war in the Mideast, where there's more who is winning this war. And I think the bigger issue is that.
So you hear that? She's saying that a major motivator for wanting to ban TikTok is trying to stop propaganda about what she calls the war in the Middle East.
Right.
Which means that
kind of amazing that she says that out loud, yeah. Huh?
So on TikTok, they're basically allowing dissenting voices. That's what she means, because the actual propaganda we get is what appears on those networks that she's on every single day, which is pro-Israel propaganda. And because they can't control TikTok, which allows dissenting narratives, you know, people who support Palestine, who are opposed to genocide, they want to ban it. And she's basically admitting it.
I know. Does she realize she's saying the quiet part out loud?
Yeah, but she doesn't care. It's like, you know,
right.
When you're part of this elite media class, you just assume we have the right to be authoritarians and ban quote unquote propaganda that goes against our propaganda.
Right.
And, you know, she's on board with that. And of course, even calling it the war in the Middle East is a form of propaganda. It's whitewashing and genocide. It's not a war. It's a genocide of a defenseless population.
TikTok has become a news delivery vehicle, an entertainment vehicle. If you mashed all the different networks together, it's not as big as TikTok. And so they have unfettered access to the American people. And they're obviously our companies can't operate in China.
They have unfettered access to the American people, which means what? You mean like free speech in a free market? Aren't we supposed to believe in
right.
the best, you know, the competition, like the best platform wins?
Yeah, may the so best platform win, exactly, yeah.
So she's acknowledging that we actually hate the free market. We hate competition. We hate free speech. And then surveillance, of course, again, that comes down to our companies are allowed to surveil. Theirs aren't. Like whatever TikTok collects data from people, like everybody else does. Only Google can do that because Google's controlled by us. You know. So that's that.
Yeah. Thanks, Kara, for your kind of just putting your, not even realizing that you're putting your foot in your mouth.
And the odd thing is she has like a reputation as being kind of like an edgy rebel.
Right.
You know, but here she is like advocating for government propaganda, shutting down, you know, this really popular app that young people use. And young people will be very upset if it gets banned.
Well, she wants the propaganda to be nationalist, not internationalist.
Yeah. And she even says like TikTok is more of a reach than all these news networks combined. Like,
right.
So yeah, it's too popular. So we have to control it and shut it down because nobody wants to watch ABC News anymore because everyone knows it's state propaganda.
Right.
All right. Well, okay. We're running out of time. So let's go to, let's hear from our friends, Mark and Marco.
Yeah, M&M.
On this issue.
I'm against it.
I know. You're consistent in that.
We have different.
The Biden campaign joined TikTok,
and
Senator Warner.
And I said that sent a pretty darn mixed message because the Biden administration supported my earlier bipartisan legislation that we would lead to a path of potentially banning TikTok because I believe that TikTok both controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, both collects data and as a news source, literally half of young people in America get a lot of their news all from TikTok.
170 million Americans.
And the idea, if you don't think the Chinese Communist Party can twist that algorithm to make it the news that they see reflective of their views, then I don't think you appreciate the nature of the threat. Would the United States ever allow China to buy CBS? I don't think they would. And we might have slightly different ways on how we go at this, but we think this is a national security issue.
The danger in TikTok is not that somebody goes on that video and, you know, puts something up that looks stupid or silly. The reason why TikTok is so attractive, its value is it has an algorithm, a recommender engine, which is one of the best in the world. That is owned by ByteDance. Under Chinese law, ByteDance must own it. And the only way that that recommender engine works is if they have access to the data. So it doesn't matter who you sell TikTok to, where they're headquartered. It doesn't even matter whether they store the data. As long as ByteDance engineers in China have access to that data, control the algorithm, they have to have access to American data to make it work. And that's.
And we only want Meta to have access to American data.
Yeah.
We want our spying done farm to table.
Yeah. And of course, there's, you know, Israel is implicated in all this spying and, you know, surveillance. And there's been all these, but they don't care about that.
Right. Right.
It's only basically anything outside of our control that has to be shut down. Totally authoritarian mindset. And they're open about it. And
yeah, Rubio actually mentions Warner mentions the countries he'd be fine with doing it. So you're right. I stand corrected. It's not just national. It's not just Meta. It's any countries that we feel don't stand up to us, whose governments don't stand up to us.
All right. Well, that was really enlightening hearing from Mark and Marco. We have come to, I think, the end of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we always have great media analysis during our Thursday Throwdown, which is your midweek dose of media madness, which you get if you are a Useful Idiot subscriber at usefulidiotspodcast.com. So not only do you get extended interviews, which we definitely recommend, obviously, but you also get a whole additional chunk of media analysis. So if you like what we do on Sundays, you'll love what we do on Thursdays.
And do you have anything planned for Tuesday for the Katie Halper Show?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have Zach Foster on, the historian he's an historian and he does stuff on Palestine. And I'm going to have him debunk this very scarily viral article in Newsweek. It was probably commissioned by Batya, but who knows? A Newsweek article where a Palestinian guy who does, I forget his name, but he's like does videos with PragerU, which is always a great sign. Mm-hmm. But he has an op-ed saying like, stop blaming Jews for Palestinians. And he blames it all on Hamas. And there are a lot of talking points that need to be debunked. So I'm going to have Zach Foster on to do that. And I actually think I may be having Amate on. I think Daniel Amate is going to do some Hasbro review with me.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah.
Very, very fun.
That's always fun. Yeah.
Very fun. All right. Well, as Katie said, our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there to support the show, get bonus content. And thanks for tuning in for another episode of Monday Morning.
See you next week.